With CarGurus Discover, you can skip the filters and describe what you're looking for in your own words. Simply type what you want, and CarGurus Discover instantly surfaces real listings that match your exact needs. It's no wonder CarGurus is the number one most visited car shopping site, according to SimilarWeb's estimated traffic data. Buy or sell your next car today with CarGurus at CarGurus.com. Go to CarGurus.com to make sure your big deal is the best deal. That's CarGurus.com. CarGurus.com.
Welcome to Behind the Headlines, your daily roundup of some of the stories our reporters have been covering across the UK today. We're trying to give them a bit more time than we can usually fit into our hourly news bulletins and find the more talkable issues. Obviously, today's been a big day in Westminster with the budget. We've got the key announcements and various reaction to the issues that matter to you.
We are lifting 450,000 children out of poverty with the end of the two-child limit.
I just think it's great. It's about time that they did something like that, you know, like for two kids when you've got five. You don't get a lot as it is.
Today, she has broken every single one of those promises.
It's that fine balance, isn't it, between the benefits and investment in services. But let's face it, hospitality, it's a really struggling sector at the moment.
But we have other stories too, including hearing from a man who's warning against buying e-bikes after a fire.
We all escaped with our lives, luckily, and then my dad jumped out shortly after. We threw our grandma out the window.
And the police forces using AI to help deal with the public. But let's start with the budget, where the Chancellor says her plans will cut the cost of living, despite announcing £26 billion worth of tax hikes. Rachel Reeves also announced she's scrapping the two-child benefit cap and cutting energy bills. But the Tory leader has accused her of putting up taxes to pay for welfare. Our political editor Georgie Prodromou talks us through the key announcements from this lunchtime, starting with how they were leaked before the Chancellor even took to the chamber.
Not only have we had weeks of rumours and leaks, but in an unprecedented move, the entire budget was accidentally released by the OBR more than half an hour before Rachel Reeves got to her feet in the Commons, with MPs in the House on their phones reading it.
This is deeply disappointing and a serious error on their part. The Office for Budget Responsibility have already made a statement taking full responsibility for their breach.
Big announcements included the national insurance and income tax thresholds staying frozen until 2031, longer than expected. That'll mean they'll have been frozen for a whole decade by then.
I know that maintaining these thresholds is a decision that will affect working people. I said that last year, and I won't pretend otherwise now. Madam Deputy Speaker, I am asking everyone to make a contribution.
Rachel Reeves has also lifted the two-child benefit cap from April, meaning larger families will get more money, which she says will lift many out of poverty.
We on this side of the House do not believe that the solution to a broken welfare system is to punish the most vulnerable. Yeah. We are lifting 450,000 children out of poverty with the end of the two-child limit. Yeah.
National insurance is also set to be charged on salary sacrifice pension contributions over £2,000 a year from 2029. Savers can only put £12,000 into cash ISAs tax-free every year instead of £20,000. And taxes have been hiked on gambling, electric cars, taxi journeys. And there'll be a new mansion tax too on properties worth over £2 million in England. While fuel duty is frozen and energy bills should be cut, Tory leader Kemi Badenoch had this to say after the budget.
She told everyone that from now on it would be stability and she would pay for everything with growth. Today, she has broken every single one of those promises. If she had any decency, she would resign.
A big moment for Rachel Reeves, but the jury's out on what the public make of it all.
Well, we've heard from Kemi Badenoch there. We'll hear from Northern Ireland's finance minister in a moment. But here's the reaction of the leader of Plaid Cymru in Wales, Rhun Iorwerth.
To be honest, I think this budget has been a shambles from start to finish. Wales is losing out again. Nothing in this budget changes the fundamental unfairness in the way Wales is funded. For example, nothing there on giving us the billions owed from HS2. I would have loved to see much more done to tackle the cost of living crisis that's hitting people so hard. You know, we have some of the highest energy costs in Wales, and much more could have been done, getting to grips with unfair standing charges and so on.
Northern Ireland's Finance Minister John O'Dowd has also slammed the Chancellor's autumn budget. Despite the executive getting £370 million, he says it doesn't go far enough. Our chief reporter James Gould has more.
We already know that the executive faces a £400 million shortfall, so the minister voiced his frustration with what is coming his way. He did, though, welcome the removal of the two-child limit and says it will lift thousands out of poverty here. But all in all, the minister says it just isn't enough.
With the £370 million over resource over 3 years and capital over 4 years, it's insufficient. It's unquestionable that our public services are facing increased demand and increased pressures upon them. And that's as a result, means that it costs more to deliver those services.
And in terms of freezing income tax thresholds, he said the Chancellor missed the chance to make sure those with the broadest shoulders carried most of the burden.
Well, one of the biggest announcements is the scrapping of the two-child benefit cap from April. Nicola from Leeds has five kids and says it'll make a big difference.
I just think it's great. It's about time that they did something like that, you know, like obviously getting for two kids when you've got five, you don't get a lot as it is. So for two kids, it's not much at all.
What kind of difference would it make to you?
Oh, a lot, especially prices of things nowadays. It really helps.
And people will turn around and say sometimes, well, you're the one who chose to have more kids. What do you say to them?
End of day, people, you know, if they want to have kids and stuff, they're not doing it for money. They're doing it because they want families, you know, and obviously that extra money helps all families.
Alison Wise helps out at a food bank in Sheffield. She also thinks it's a step in the right direction.
So our hope is that this is one of a raft of measures, and it's not going to save everything. This isn't, you know, the be-all and end-all, but it's one of an important set of measures, hopefully, which this budget is going to reveal, which is going to address the issues which are causing child poverty.
Another of today's announcements paves the way to introduce a so-called tourist tax in England, something already allowed in Scotland and Wales. It could see a £2 a night extra charge, with places like Devon and Cornwall expected to be one of the first to try and introduce it. Claire Flower runs Beverley Holiday Park in Torbay, which has around 12,000 holidaymakers a year. Many come from the Midlands.
I think people are used to it a little bit more paying it abroad, but there's a lot of cheap package holidays abroad, and the VAT in Europe is generally, for the tourism, a lot lower than our VAT, so they've got other benefits that they can counteract this. We don't have that. We don't feel that the customers will want to pay it. They're already struggling to make ends meet, and holidays are deemed as a treat. There's also going to be a knock-on effect to the restaurants, the attractions, if our visitor numbers drop.
But Councillor James Bukowski oversees finances at the County Council and can see a benefit.
It's that fine balance, isn't it, between the benefits and investment in services. And we all know that the tourists do use services and, you know, they're an additional strain on the council. But let's face it, hospitality, it's a really struggling sector at the moment.
The government says data suggests what they're calling reasonable fees has a minimal impact on visitor numbers. Well, ahead of Rachel Reeves delivering her budget, farmers from across the UK descended on Whitehall to protest against the so-called family farm tax. That's despite the Met Police banning growers from bringing their tractors there, as was originally planned. Our senior reporter Tom Claiborne has been in Westminster for us.
As you can hear, dozens of farmers defied that instruction. You're listening to what Rachel Reeves and Keir Starmer heard as they left for Parliament this morning, with hundreds more protesters gathering outside the gates of Downing Street, making their message crystal clear to them.
We can't survive this. And if the aim is to rid Great Britain of British farmers, well, you're going about it the right way.
For us, it would probably mean a bill of around about £2 million in tax.
It could mean that when it comes to my children inheriting the farm, that it can either be a viable business or we can't actually afford to pay it. So I feel in 2 to 3 generations' time, all the family farms could be wiped out.
But despite the speculation in the build-up to this budget, Number 11 reaffirmed they weren't moving on this issue, a decision which means restrictions on inheritance tax relief will be coming into play from next April. It's a move that's been criticised by more more than just growers in central London today. Robbie Moore is the Shadow Farming Minister and told us why this tax must be axed.
The average size of a farming business is about 200 acres, and when you valued all of that farmland, the growing crops, the stocks in store, the livestock, the machinery, you're well over that threshold, and therefore exposing that family business to an IHT liability, which they simply will not be able to pay, because the average rate of return for a farming business is 1%, if not anything at all.
The Treasury say these changes, first announced over a year ago, will ensure the wealthiest estates pay their fair share when it comes to investing in public services.
Still to come on Behind the Headlines, we're at the start of a public inquiry into a disgraced neurosurgeon and how AI is helping answer questions that come into the police.
Things like somebody asking whether they can cut their neighbour's hedge down if it's coming over their fence.
But first, a former Royal Marine today dramatically changed his plea at the last minute and admitted driving a car into crowds of Liverpool fans during their Premier League title parade. Paul Doyle's been told to expect a jail sentence of some length. Our reporter Harry Booth was at Liverpool Crown Court for us.
With the prosecution about to open its case, the jury was discharged and Doyle had each charge read to him. His voice broke and he sobbed as he pleaded guilty to all 31 charges. Later, Chief Prosecutor Sarah Hammond laid out some of the evidence against Doyle.
Dash cam footage from Doyle's vehicle shows that as he approached Dale Street and Water Street, he became increasingly agitated by the crowds. Rather than wait for them to pass, he deliberately drove at them, forcing his way through.
Merseyside police said it was only by sheer luck no one was killed by the 54-year-old's dangerous driving. Detective Chief Inspector John Fitzgerald praised the response of emergency services.
The exceptional work of the emergency services, including police, Merseyside Fire and Rescue Service, the North West Ambulance Service and His Majesty's Coast Guard, should be recognised as they came to the aid of victims, extracting four people from underneath Doyle's car and treating a number of others.
Liverpool FC said in a statement they hope the conviction brings some peace to all those affected by the horrific incident. Doyle's due to return to court for a two-day sentencing hearing on the 15th of December.
Coming up, a harrowing warning about charging e-bikes and how artificial intelligence is helping a couple of police forces. But first, the first day of opening statements in the public inquiry into disgraced former NHS Tayside neurosurgeon Sam El-Jamel have been heard in Edinburgh today. Our reporter Dale Eaton's been keeping up with proceedings.
The inquiry was announced in 2023 to investigate the practice of Sam El-Jamel and the governance systems in place to protect patients, as around 200 are thought to have been harmed through a series of botched operations while he was employed by NHS Tayside. The big news from today's opening statements in the capital came in the morning session. Joanna Cherry, KC, on behalf of a group of patients, informed the inquiry that in July this year, the Health Board destroyed around 40 hard copy theatre logbooks containing information on his surgeries between 1995 and 2013, despite a Do Not Destroy order being enforced since October last year. She expressed her concern during her statement.
It beggars belief that this should have occurred, notwithstanding everything that has gone before.
Lead campaigner Jules Rose says she's angered but not surprised.
They've basically stuck two fingers up to Lord Weir, to our legal team, including Joanna Cherry KC, but most of all, to the patients.
Una Doherty, KC, on behalf of NHS Tayside, says much of the information normally held in the destroyed documents should be held within patient records. She added the Health Board deeply regrets the error.
Given the importance of this matter, it has been raised at a senior level within NHS Tayside. Renewed instructions have been communicated to staff in relation to identification, logging and retention of documentation relevant to Mr. El-Jamel.
More opening statements will be heard tomorrow.
To London next, where a man who had to help his grandma jump out of a flat window to avoid a fire started by an e-bike is urging people not to get one this Black Friday week. 24-year-old Jamel Campbell managed to escape from the second floor in Catford earlier this year. He told our reporter Claire Bode he's had e-bikes and e-scooters for a few years and had gone for a more expensive model.
Basically, I had been using this e-scooter for over a year, and one day, all of a sudden, while I was using it, it kind of just started like juddering, like the battery kept turning off and turning on again. So I had brought it back to my grandma's house one night, and then we had it on charge for not even that long, about half an hour. We had it off charge, was watching football, about an hour has passed, and all of a sudden we just hear like a loud bang, like somebody threw a grenade into the building. And we come out of my dad's room and we look towards the front door, which is where it was on charge, and we just see a lot of smoke and flames just literally bursting out of the room. Because the fire was directly where the door was, which was the only exit, we had to kind of jump out of the window, and we were on the second floor. I spoke to my dad, I told him, like, I'm gonna jump out the window, you know. As I jumped out the window and looked behind me, obviously, I can see all of the windows and stuff bursting with flames, and I'm just there waiting a couple seconds, and I don't see them come to the window to jump out, so I'm there just like, I've got to go back in, I've got to try and help them. So as the other residents are leaving the building, I kind of go back in up to the second floor to try and get in through the door, but it's literally too hot. My next thought was go to the back window, and luckily that was in my grandma's room. There was obviously no way to get out of it than jumping, so what my dad had to do is he had to throw her duvet cover out, and I had to open it like kind of a mat kind of, and he had to throw her out of the window. I caught her, and she obviously injured her leg very badly. It was like a big gash on her leg. You know, we all escaped with our lives, luckily, and then my dad jumped out shortly after we threw my grandma out the window. He had burns on his ears and on his neck, but it was nothing in comparison to what could have happened.
And you said you bought this was like a higher end model as well. I mean, when we hear about e-bike fires, you might think, oh, maybe you got a cheap one off the market, but you know, you felt like you went through the proper channels.
100%. Checked the reviews of the company. One of my friends had also got one from the same company. You know, I recommend it. Yeah, unfortunately, this is just what happened. It's like you hear stories about this and think, oh, it's one out of 1,000 or 1,000,000. You never expect it to happen to you, and then it does, and you're like, wow, it's just not worth the risk of, you know, having one.
And what's your message to anyone considering getting an e-bike this Black Friday or around Christmas?
Honestly, the risk of what could potentially go wrong compared to the fun you're having, and it's just not worth it. It's genuinely not worth it, and I wouldn't be getting one again.
And finally, Thames Valley and Hampshire Police Forces have become one of the first in the country to introduce AI to help people make contact with them. Bobby is an artificial intelligence assistant available via the force's website to answer frequently asked and non-emergency questions. Our regional correspondent Jonathan Richards spoke to head of contact management for both forces, Chief Superintendent Simon Dodds.
Really important to say what it isn't, first of all. So it's not an alternative for reporting 999 emergency incidents. And it's not if you want to report a crime. It's to deal with the myriad of questions that we have coming into our contact centres. So, for example, things like somebody asking whether they can cut their neighbour's hedge down if it's coming over their fence. They might want to contact an officer in a case. How do I go about that? Those are all the sort of questions that come into our control rooms, which are really important for the people asking them, but they each take 2 or 3 minutes of operator time to resolve, which Bobby, the name of our AI virtual assistant, will be able to answer in a way that allows our operators to then concentrate on dealing with the 999 calls, the really important calls coming into the control room.
There's good AI and there's bad AI. And I think we've all had experience of talking to bots, and it can be incredibly frustrating. I mean, really maddeningly so. Are you satisfied it won't frustrate people and indeed upset people?
We have Bobby pointed at a number of articles that we share with our staff to inform them when they give their response. So the confidence comes from Bobby is using exactly the same information as our experienced staff use to answer the questions. And it is closed AI, so it can only use the information that we have provided. So it's not taking information from across the internet, for example. This is definitely not us trying to replace our staff in our control rooms. This is very much about trying to provide another channel by which members of the public can contact us. In many cases, the response you get from Bobby will be far quicker than ringing 101 and perhaps having to wait in a queue. So we think this will really appeal to the public.
And you can find out more on these and other stories on the news pages of our radio station websites. Don't forget to come back here tomorrow, subscribe wherever you get your podcasts, or listen on the Rayo app. A new episode of Behind the Headlines is uploaded every weekday evening.